Here we are with Starhawk.
Hi.
Starhawk has been an organizer in her high school since the days of the Vietnam War. Starhawk has been active in social change movements for over 30 years. She's organized and trained protesters and been on the front lines of anti-nuclear actions at Diablo Canyon, Lawrence, Livermore Labs, Vandenberg Air Force Base, the Nevada Test Site, among others. A lot of you are very familiar with Starhawk through her writing, The Fifth Sacred Thing, and many other works. Today, Starhawk is actually up at UC Santa Cruz doing some workshops for the Student Environmental Center, and she's joining me here on the phone to talk about the Reclaim the Commons mobilization in San Francisco, June 3rd through 9th.
Hi.
So thank you, Starhawk.
Yeah, it's good to be down here.
I wanted to talk about Reclaim the Commons.
Mm-hmm.
This is the mobilization that's coming up in San Francisco. Now, can you lay down some of the basics of the mobilization and the reasons for mobilizing, and then go into some of the solutions that are going to come and some of the possibilities that we try and build?
Yeah, the inspiration for this mobilization was the fact that the biotech industry is having its major annual conference in San Francisco, June 6th through 9th, and we decided that we wanted to protest that and try to bring up some of the issues of the irresponsible use of biotechnology and the way that biotechnology, in the way that it sort of takes over things that should be as basic to life as the gene pool that organisms have, the biodiversity of the ecosystems that we live in, and basically privatizes them, takes them over and makes profit from them. And what we wanted to do was use that as a springboard for talking about all the ways that corporations have taken control over some very basic aspects of our lives, and the fact that we want to take it back. We want to reclaim the commons, those things that should be common to us all, because they're the basic things that sustain life, because they're things that are too precious to us, or too beautiful, or too sacred, or too important to simply be seen as a means for profit. So
and,
we're.
And what are some of the commons?
The air, the water, the biological heritage of organisms, our cultural and intellectual heritage, the airwaves, public space, time, you know, all those things that actually make for life and culture, knowledge, education, you know, music, songs, all those things that are the building blocks of culture.
And these
those are
all
things that are, you know, historically have always been and need to be common to all of us.
And these are all things that are being threatened by corporations?
Yeah,
through privatization?
I mean, we're in a situation now where corporations can actually patent life forms. They don't have to create those life forms, but they can simply describe the genetic code. You know, so for example, there's a yellow bean that's been grown in Mexico for thousands of years, and that farmers made a livelihood from. A corporation in the U.S. wrote out the genetic code, patented it, and demanded 6 cents on the dollar for every load of beans that was sold. And what happened was distributors said, well, hell, we're not going to pay that, and stopped importing the beans, and the farmers lost their livelihood. You know, that wasn't the fruit of somebody's individual work. That was the fruit of thousands of years of, you know, ordinary farmers selecting for particular traits that worked well in their particular area. And somebody who had no part of that labor and no part of that heritage simply basically pirated it. And it's an example, I think, of the many kinds of ways. You know, right now we see that corporate money has a huge influence on our political system, which, again, should be the commons. The commons is the fact that each one of us should have the ability to impact the decisions that are made that affect us, regardless of how much money we have. And all of that goes into reclaiming the commons. So we're looking at it as a way of linking the environmental movement with other movements for justice, like the racial justice movement, the environmental justice movement, and with the peace movement, because in some ways the worst takings of the commons is what happens in war with the destruction of all the things that make for life.
So what is happening in San Francisco June 3rd through 9th? That's a big time frame.
So we're having a convergence that will begin with a teach-in on June 3rd through the 5th for people to come and learn about these issues, to learn more about biotechnology in particular, learn more about all of the different areas that we've been discussing and are talking about. June 5th, there's also a big peace march planned in San Francisco. On June 6th, we're going to have a biodiversity parade and a really, really free market that will go past Moscone Center, where the Bio 2004 is meeting. And on June 7th, we're going to have a day of racial justice actions march and other actions to focus on racial and human diversity. And then on the 8th, we're having a day of direct action around the conference with nonviolent direct actions to disrupt and impact the discussions that are going on inside. And on June 9th, we're having a day of eco-actions of going out into the city. We've been working with neighborhood groups in different places, from the Mission to Hunters Point to the East Bay, to actually plan things that are going to be going on much long beyond the mobilization, of community gardens, of transforming streets with planters and gardens that represent some of the vision of what we want, which is communities having control of their resources, which is locally grown, healthy, organic fruits and vegetables, herbs and medicinals, people having control over their own health and their own health care, and neighborhoods getting together and really forming the kinds of community that we need to safeguard those things that are common to us all.
What kind of people and organizations are coming together for the teach-in?
A lot of different organizations that have been working on issues of food and agriculture, like Food First. We've got endorsements from many of the different groups that have been working on these issues in San Francisco. For the Day of Racial Justice, we're working with community groups in Hunters Point, in the East Bay, with Books Not Bars, with the Idris Deli Foundation, which is focusing on some of the murders of African-American youth and a number of disabled African-American people who've been basically killed by police in San Francisco over the last few years, and particularly in the last weeks. We're working with groups from Global Exchange to Direct Action to Stop the War on the direct actions and on the teach-ins and on all the other activities that are going on.
What about the group International Answer? I know that they had a large role in organizing some of the peace rallies.
They are organizing the peace march on the 5th, and we actually haven't been working with them, but we are scheduling a teach-in so that we can support that, because we think that's such an important issue right now. And so we'll be bringing a contingent to that march.
I was reading before you called Welcome to the Possible from ReclaimTheCommons.net, and that went into some of the idea of the really, really free market, and I think that that's a really, you know, just special idea, something that I've been a part of and really do support. Can you explain that for the listeners, what the idea of the really, really free market is and where it's been in practice before?
The first one we did was in Miami when we were protesting the Free Trade Area of the Americas back in November. And we decided, you know, they always talk about the free market, that we'd set up a really free market, a really, really free market where everything was free. And we had a park in Miami where a lot of homeless people hang out, and we did outreach to them and made sure that they felt okay about it, and set up our market there with free food and free medical care and free legal advice and free massage and free entertainment, and people read poems and other people played music. We had a healing space. We had a trauma counseling space. We had free art that people gave out, and all kinds of wonderful things. And it was a really beautiful, wonderful event, especially because everything in Miami had been so hard and the police had been so repressive and were continuing to be so repressive. You know, it was actually quite difficult to even get to the really, really free market without being harassed or threatened with arrest. That once you actually got there, it was truly like entering a different world, a different space. And it felt so welcoming and so warm and so wonderful. That was partly what gave me the idea for writing. We were talking about wanting to share with people the vision of what could be possible and stretch our imaginations. And so I decided to write a series of stories about that, which will be, a couple of them are already up on our website, which is reclaimthecommons.net, and others will be going up as soon as I get a chance to finish writing them.
Now, there's a lot going on this summer. In fact, the same time as the Reclaim the Commons mobilization is the G8 mobilization in Sea Island, Georgia. Can you tell me how that relates and, you know, how that may be beneficial to bringing people out to this mobilization and maybe how that may have hindered things in bringing people out?
We're thinking of this mobilization very much as linked to our sister mobilizations in Georgia around the G8, because, again, they're around the same issues of corporate control of government and corporate control of our resources and daily lives. So we see this as the West Coast mobilization in solidarity around the G8. Our day of action is going to be the 8th, which is the opening of the meeting of the G8 in Georgia. It's a way for people who can't travel all the way to Georgia or don't want to travel all the way to Georgia to come and join us in San Francisco.
Now, there's been a more radical call to action and website, westcoastg8.net. Has there been interaction between Reclaim the Commons mobilization and the West Coast G8? And
yes, we're in communication, and their call is very much in solidarity with ours. And to be honest, ours, you know, I wouldn't say that theirs is more radical than ours. You know, we are still in formulating the direct action that we want for the day of the 8th. You know, we have always had direct action as part of the vision of what we were going to do. But we have been focusing a lot on just pulling together the infrastructure for the whole mobilization, which has been a huge amount of work and needs a huge amount of resources. But we very much are working together.
When a group such as Global Exchange endorses this mobilization,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, CCOF, the California Certified Organic Foods, what role do they play in the mobilization? Does it depend on the each individual organization on whether or not they want to reach out to their members? Like, I'm curious, do they send out emails or give phone calls to all their members to tell them to participate in this?
I would imagine most of those kinds of organizations don't really tell their members to do anything, because I would imagine their members would sort of rise up and say, wait a minute, don't tell us what to do. But that what they would help do is publicize this, invite people to take part, put the word out to their membership, you know, participate in the things that fit with whatever their framework is. You know, I would imagine that some of the NGOs are not going to participate in the direct action, and some of them might. A lot of them might participate in the teach-ins and the marches and the legal and permanent activities and help support the infrastructure that we can use for all of these things.
What role does the BioDev conference play in this? Is that who's organizing the teach-in?
Yeah, and the BioDev people have been organizing a counter-conference for many years around genetic engineering whenever the industry has its major conference. And they have been really instrumental in bringing this issue up and making people aware of some of the implications of genetic engineering and what that means when these organisms are let loose into our environment without safeguards and without control.
In Miami, we saw an $8 million budget go to the police state to fight off protesters that were trying to voice their free speech in Miami. Are you aware of what the police state is going to look like in San Francisco? I don't know if we can ever really be aware, but has there been any sort of foreshadowing of what that may look like?
Well, we have a very different situation in San Francisco than Miami because we have a much more progressive population than Miami does. We have a police department that can be extremely repressive, especially if you happen to be African American, but that historically has had a more of a hands-off policy toward demonstrations and dissent. We have a board of supervisors that has a number of very progressive people on it, and we've been actually working to see if we can get the board of supervisors to pass a resolution that will declare the 8th Reclaim the Commons Day, and that will put them on record as supporting the right of people to dissent. And so we don't think we're going to be facing the kinds of things we were facing in Miami, San Francisco. We could always be wrong, but...
You know. In Miami, there was just that one...
On the other hand, if someone feels like they missed out on the tear gas and the rubber bullets in Miami, they can come to the Republican National Convention at the end of August, and I'm sure we'll have all the repression you could possibly want there.
There's a lot happening with biotechnology, mm-hmm. from food to our clothing, mm-hmm. to our fuels to weaponry.
The three major things that they're focusing on in the industry conference are agriculture, pharmaceuticals, and biowarfare. Biowarfare, I think goes without saying, is something that we oppose pretty blanketly because even though they claim it's for defensive purposes only, I think we all know how easily that can be perverted. Biogenetically engineering of our food and agriculture is something we're also very strongly opposed to. We've seen the irresponsible way in which these organisms have been introduced in the U.S. with corn, with canola, with soy, with cotton. All of these are wind-pollinated crops, and none of them can really be controlled, and all of them have resulted in contamination of many, many other crops that are grown by farmers who did not want to be growing genetically modified crops. And then to add insult to injury, Monsanto has been notorious for suing those farmers for royalties on crops that they've contaminated with their genetically modified organisms. We now know that corn has been contaminated down in Oaxaca and Puebla, which is the original center of corn and the center of biodiversity. We have been seeing reports of adverse health effects on human beings, on allergies, on insects, on many, many different aspects from these things. And the other aspect is that really when people have a choice, they don't want genetically modified food. In the U.S., we don't have a choice because it's not labeled, you know, and labeling laws have been defeated. But Vermont recently passed a labeling law. Mendocino County recently voted to ban genetically modified food being grown in that county. And in Europe and many other places, they've blanketly rejected these things. Pharmaceuticals, it's less of a cut and dried thing. There are some things that are being done that are very beneficial and are being done in a way, you know, that are controlled. But there are other things that are being done in ways that are potentially very, very dangerous and irresponsible, one of which is growing out food crops that are genetically modified to be medicines. And again, one of the problems is that you really cannot control the drift of those genes into other related crops and organisms. There's many problems with the pharmaceutical thing, and again, one of the problems really come down to the fact that it's profit-driven and corporate-controlled. You know, we believe that research is one of those commons, again, that should be directed by our needs as human beings, as human communities, not by the needs of corporations.
And it's interesting to point out, too, that these corporations take, take three, for an example, DuPont, Dow, and Monsanto. Mm-hmm. All three of them are involved in agriculture, pharmaceuticals, and chemicals like pesticides.
That's right.
And they've been creative enough to relabel themselves as the life science industry. And I wanted to get your opinion on stem cell research, for example.
That's, you know, I would love to talk more, but I'm actually in the middle of a workshop that I have to get back to. So,
okay.
I just want to let people know to come and join us, to go to our website, which is reclaimthecommons.net, and you can find out more about the mobilization. We're really hoping a lot of people will come up from Santa Cruz. We really need a lot of money and support. We've been had a lot of trouble raising funds for this. So if people can donate, that's wonderful. If you can't donate, please just come and join us. And thanks so much.
Okay, thank you very much for joining me today, Starhawk.
Okay, bye.
Bye. All right, that was an interview with Starhawk. And now stay tuned for the Ballad of Percy Smizer.
Come gather round, you people, a story I will tell of Farmer Percy Smizer, whom tragedy befell. Now he's standing for all farmers against corporate greed. He's fighting for the right to save our seed and for the rights of all farmers to grow their own seed and plant for the future safe food that we all need. Percy Smizer, on him you can depend, to stand up to Monsanto till the end. Farming in Saskatchewan for over 50 years, seed saver and developer, respected by his peers. His non-GE canola was known throughout the West, disease and pest resistant with the best. Then Monsanto's Roundup Ready turned up in Percy's field, and they claimed they were the owner of his yield. They threatened and harassed him with thugs of every sort. Then they set out to destroy the man in court. Lawyers made their case, the trial judge agreed. Under patent law, he was no longer owner of his seed. No matter where it came from, he'd have to pay the cost. A lifetime of saving seed was lost. And for the rights of all farmers to grow their own seed and plant for the future safe food that we all need. Percy Smizer, on him you can depend, to stand up to Monsanto till the end. Now Monsanto's corporate motto is hope, food, and health, but all they seem to care about is profit, power, and wealth. Intimidating farmers till a culture of fear rips up the social fabric we hold dear. Just like a corporate Goliath, Monsanto swaggers round. But Percy Smizer is the one to bring the giant down. He's taking the fight back into court, the highest in the land, so that patents on living things are banned. And for the rights of all farmers to plant for the future, Percy Smizer, on him you can depend, to stand up to Monsanto till the end. Now Percy tells his story all around this earth, how genetic engineering will steal a farmer's worth. Small farmers in Africa, in India and France know if Percy loses, they don't stand a chance. And for the rights some old farmers to grow their own seed and plant for the future safe food that we all need. Percy Smizer, on him you can depend to stand.